Hello and welcome to the Navy Blue Corner. I'm Ian, joined as always by my good mate Lockie, and the Blues have lost in heartbreaking fashion yet again to the Pies, losing by 6 points after conceding a late Nick Daicos goal. It's the first time this year that we have suffered back-to-back losses. Look, like always, there is plenty to cover as we dissect what went wrong, how we can learn from the defeat, and we'll be sure to answer the big question of how bad was that loss and where do things sit for the Blues as things stand after round 8. But first, Lockie, how are you and how are you feeling a few days removed from the game? Are you still as fired up, angry, frustrated? I'm keen to see how you are.
As always, after a loss, definitely calm down. I gave the game a full rewatch yesterday with the emotion taken out, which was good. So I'm excited to talk about some of my thoughts from that. But when the final siren went, I definitely went for a big long walk outside to calm myself. Didn't give my housemates any attention for a good hour because I was pretty down about that one in the moment.
Yeah, there was a big sense of anger, frustration, disappointment. As we start on the Navy noise and get into the nitty-gritty on kind of where things broke down, I kind of want to delve into the emotion of it because it's such a massive clash. Carlton v Collingwood, arguably our biggest rivals. The games have been big as of late. And around that, I guess, disappointment, frustration, where did it kind of sit for you? And what was probably the biggest thing that led to that emotion? If it was disappointment, why was it so? I'm really keen to delve into this. I've seen some people be really, really angry with it rather than maybe just frustrated. So I really want to know exactly where you sort of sit after this defeat.
That's a really good way for us to start things off, I think. I mean, it probably goes without saying, but we knew when we built up this game last week that a win against the Pies just feels like more and a loss to them feels like more as well. So I think regardless of how it went down, there would be that element. I think there was definitely PTSD flashbacks to 2022, like that kind of goes without saying a little bit as well. But I'll also kind of counter it a little bit by saying that I didn't necessarily come away from this one feeling like we should have won. I'm interested to hear your perspective on that. Like, I think Collingwood were better than us in totality. So that kind of reduced it a little bit for me. We've kind of spoken about that before. I feel like we get a lot more upset when it's like that one we kind of gave it away, where this one, I don't know. I didn't feel as much in that regard. How about you?
No, it's so weird. And I feel like, I don't know if I'm evolving in the way I see different games now. And I've kind of tried to wrestle with it throughout the season before the season really started. And now that we've tasted finals and kind of proper finals, we won a few, got to a prelim, old enough to understand it now. Whereas when it was all happening in the 2010s, sort of teenagers still, it was all kind of fresh. And as a supporter, trying to understand what regular season games mean and what to take from them and what even happens at different stages of the year. We know, you just flash back to last year and we were abhorrent for most of the season and all of a sudden, halfway point, things turned. We go on a wild run and we know what ended up happening from that. So it's trying to kind of get that level-headedness from this. And Collingwood, it always hurts. You lose to them. It's painful. The manner in which it happens, being level, having an opportunity to win, it hurts. But I'm kind of in your boat in this where I guess I'm not as distraught as maybe other occasions because even though we had that opportunity late, we can go into it at some stage of Harry getting that ball around the arc, turning it over, and with a minute or so to go, you know, we score from that. We win. So we're still giving ourselves the chance, but
absolutely.
Yeah. I think for three quarters, we were well and truly beaten. And I sort of had the big note here that I can, and this is where I'm still kind of wrestling with it, where I can deal with being outplayed and lose games of footy, why I'm so disappointed in the performance and so frustrated. It's not just because it's Collingwood, but it's because we got outworked, really, after the quarter time ended. Contest and pressure is what Vossie's been talking about. It's what he's preaching. It's the mantra. It is what our game style is built on. I didn't see that. Our pressure was down. Tackling numbers were down. Mm-hmm. A contest in a game where they didn't have Dugowie. They didn't have Tom Mitchell. Carlton fans are licking their lips thinking this should be where we dominate after performances in recent weeks. That's where I'm disappointed because, you know, they can beat us tactically. They can be simply the better side in certain aspects, but I want to be that team that keeps battling and fights to the end and has that pressure. And for that really not to be there, that was my biggest disappointment out of that game.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, we can delve into those different elements of where we think it broke down. I saw a lot of people talking about pressure and contest as their two big disappointments. The contest part for me, it wasn't something that really stood out massively on replay. Like that element felt kind of a bit more even to me. The pressure was the one that in the eye test watching it for me where it was like, wow, just noticeably down for us. And they were, you know, Collingwood were playing as good as you really can in that regard, I thought.
No, and I think a lot of where my view kind of around that contest is, one, potentially slightly biased in the I went into the game thinking this is an area we should really dominate. Not only is it our strength, but then they're missing key personnel in that area. So they're going to have to adjust how they play for us not to use that. For them to almost beat us at our strength, that hurts. It's frustrating. And the lack of pressure was around that contest and losing it so poorly. I thought the way that we defended stoppages for the most part was poor, and then to lose to a stoppage goal in your defensive half, that's another thing that just it takes the wind out of you. But the lack of pressure is the key point I kind of want to touch on to start with, because just looking at the stats, this is the real frustrator, is second lowest tackles for the game all year at 54. Our lowest was surprisingly against GWS with 52, ended up winning that game. And then it was also our tied lowest tackles inside 50 all year on 9, which is horrific. Again, tied with that GWS game. And tackles inside 50, up until the Pies game, we were averaging 16.6 tackles inside 50. So for that to drop down to 9 really shows you a lot of the issues with how we wanted to play and what went wrong on that night, not only in how we were getting the ball inside 50, the way we weren't able to retain it, and then Collingwood being able to spread from the back half, and a lot of their scores were really generated from their defensive half. That just really costs you when, again, this is that mantra that has been sort of preached to these boys.
Yeah, I hear that for sure. I definitely felt that in a tackle perspective around the ground. Without trying to be pedantic on the inside 50 tackles, like, we had 38 inside 50s. That is not enough to win a game. So I feel like there's a little bit of that tied together there with the low inside 50 tackles, just the lack of supply. But, I mean, I've been kind of saying this, having this feeling for weeks, and it's kind of this, it really bottled up in me in this game. I'm just not enjoying the three smalls at all. I think we can get more from other players that maybe you don't deem small forwards that will, you know, still apply that same amount of pressure that we're expecting from guys like Durden and Fantasia, and maybe we'll see a better result with the stats as well. But we can get into that when we talk about the Melbourne game.
Yeah, no, and it's very clear we're missing a guy like Fogarty that was leading the inside 50 tackles in the league. And I think he's still ridiculously high in the stats, at least for the averaging the amount of tackles per game, which shows just the standard that he was leading in that forward line. What did you see as far as the pressure and the midfield, and maybe even delving into how we were dealing with the pressure? Because that was probably the key strength of Collingwood on the night. Thought they really brought the heat, and we struggled to deal with that and kind of match it for a lot of the stages. And I kind of saw the loss happening in the middle of the ground. Is that something that you saw be where things broke down for you?
Yeah. I think partially. I definitely agree. It felt like a between the arcs problem for us in a lot of different ways. And I really tried to like rank my problems that I felt in this game when I was watching it back, because there is so many. And but like we've always kind of spoken about, I feel like all of them are tinkerable in a way. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on tinkering with this one, though, because I don't know whether there's personnel things here. I'm keen to hear your perspectives on like how you think guys like Chera are going at the moment. Is it a personnel thing? Is it the tactical elements? Obviously, people are talking about how McCray kind of played Cripper and negated his impact, those kind of things. Yeah, I'm keen to hear your takes on it.
Yeah, well, just looking at some of the key stats as far as dealing with the pressure and just what Collingwood brought to this, it's the most tackles against that we have had all year by 20. Collingwood had 88. Mm-hmm. The next highest was 68 against GWS. It's the worst tackle differential we've had all year, negative 34. Our next worst was negative 16 against GWS. That's kind of almost the bigger part of this. Not only were Collingwood able to bring that heat and tackle effectively, we didn't seem to match it in that area. And our only other negatives have come against Brisbane, negative one, and Geelong, negative two. So for really most of the games, I think Brisbane and Geelong, you can kind of just say we split it in the end. There's not too much of a difference. There's only two games we've been negative in the tackle count. Clearly shows that this isn't a issue that's been there every single week, which is why, again, I'm not necessarily overreacting to this loss. But if we're just looking at it in isolation, it's a massive issue that clearly shows we can't be struggling in that area every single week. And then it's the most tackles inside 50 against all year at 22. Next highest was 19 against GWS. Worst tackles inside 50 differential all year, negative 13. Next worst again was that GWS game, negative 10. And they're the only two games that have been negative. So it's maybe that gives you a bit of perspective, which is why I wanted to throw those out there. Not just say what happened this week, but get an overall thought for it. But it wasn't just that they brought it. It was what we then did with it. I thought our ball security was a big, big problem throughout the night. This wasn't just fumbling. But I was noticing that I feel like it's been something for a while that maybe has gone a little bit under the radar, but we kind of panic a little bit in congestion. And a lot of the time we just look to get the ball out straight away. Tackle comes and it's flick the handball. Rather than maybe at stages, we could have been a bit more composed because there wasn't that prior opportunity. I think Wiedering does it well, where he'll just get the ball, get tackled and go down. And it's like, okay, get a stoppage, reload. Whereas there were too many stages where guys like Cripper to highlight in particularly, he's always trying to body out and get that quick handball. But because it's not a clean handball, the next guy's also under pressure because of what Collingwood were able to sustain in the middle of the park. Now, Walsh is under pressure. And then if he doesn't go down and just take the tackle, he then flicks it out. Now, Chera's under even more pressure and the handballs get worse. The space decreases. Yeah. The pressure builds on the player because it's a hot footy all of a sudden rather than the space. And then when we finally then turn the ball over, all our guys are on the ground. We're not set up in position to defend from a midfield as the ball spreads out. Collingwood are because they've brought the numbers and the heat. And then it hurts us the other way. So I think that can be maybe one of those just easy fixes where we just have to learn. Knowing stoppage is our kind of number one strength, particularly in the midfield, that, hey, if we don't have that clear option, don't worry.
Let's have a
stoppage. You don't have prior. Just have another stoppage. Calm the game down. Because I think that was exacerbating Collingwood's pressure. It certainly wasn't helping us calm things down. Did you notice anything around our ball retention and security in those tight stages?
I think it's a really good observation. It's not something I noted down, but as soon as you started talking about it, it took me back to a lot of those moments. I can think of a key TDK one where I thought he did that exact thing where, yeah, as soon as he got it, he just kind of handballed over his shoulder. If he got tackled, it would have been a ball up. Instead, it goes straight to the Collingwood player and they go forward. Yeah, and then I guess the other thing that can go wrong if, in that scenario, if it's not just a direct handball or whatever to the opposition, is then we're rushed, we get a couple of those rushed handballs out, and then we snap it over our shoulder without looking, and of course they're going to have someone in that perfect spot, and now they're attacking on the turnover. So I think it's a really good point.
Is that, do you think, if you were to try to nail down what that problem is,
mm-hmm.
is that more a directive? Do you think we're trying to play a style that is move the ball quick, get those handballs happening? Because in other stages, we probably overused the football again, trying to overhandball when we were maybe out. We would almost, we were out and clear and could have maybe kicked that ball 30, 40 meters inside 50, but we went for that extra handball. Or is it simply down to a little bit of mentality? Are we maybe not as composed just yet? We're still building. Yep. We're still growing. Is it a mental thing? Is there a bit of panic in that, or is it more directive? What do you make?
I lean more towards the mental side. I think, like, I generally like it. I think, like, as you touched on with your stats, like the pressure and what Collingwood did to us in these situations was elite. We're not going to get that every week in the home and away season. So I think that style of play could look a lot better against teams that aren't coming off the flag. I think there's still kind of gelling to happen with these guys. Chera's obviously back in the mix. Pitto still kind of finding his way. So I think there's an element of that too. Obviously, Walsh hasn't played the whole season. So it's not something that I, yeah. But then again, like, what's the thing that we would try? Like, if we're not getting the, you know what I mean? I don't know.
No, it's tough. It's tough. And it's a balancing act. I think there is a bit of mentality and just trying to deal with that pressure. And these are the learnings. And again, this is why I'm not as panicked about it all. And I kind of don't want to jump into that conversation too much because I really want to talk about it in our media meltdown segment, talking about, you know, has there been maybe a bit of an overreaction to the loss and to the performance, or is this a trend that's been building and we're struggling now in a little bit of a blip? I kind of want to save a lot of that chatter, which I feel like I'm about to head down, but I guess I kind of wanted to just go quickly back to your midfield mix talk and can you fix it with personnel? That's another frustrating component in this was our best midfield mix. I would say it's the most ideal midfield that we had out on the park. Both ruckmen out there. Pitto's been good for the clearance numbers so far. We got Chera back in. They're the players that I want around the ball, and it just wasn't there. Is there an element of Chera's first game back, thought he was pretty down, didn't seem to influence anything? Is that just like a bit of ring rust, or is there something else that we can do with this midfield? Was there anything else you wish we tried in this game or want to see going forward?
Too small a sample size on the midfield part for me to be changing anything drastic. I think I flagged it earlier in the season. Chera is just a bit of a watch for me on his midfield role and the actual grand impact that he has, and whether there's a better mix for us there, but just a watch at this stage.
Yeah, I say that, it's kind of interesting because I thought he was like one of our better midfielders last year, and for big stages until he got that injury, we were all saying, wow, this guy has finally taken that step up and he could be leading our best and fairest. He was the one that was head and shoulders above the others when we were struggling. So yeah, I'm happy to kind of play it similarly to you in his first game back, give it some time, but standards are there. We know what he can do. We know what we expect, and that wasn't good enough. He can't be dishing that up again. I guess on that kind of midfield, last thing I want to touch on is, are they kind of where there's been a lot of talk around team defense and how we're conceding a lot of scores at the moment. One of the best teams scoring for, but one of the worst against. And it's why I think it was on the couch showed the big who's in the premiership window. And they said that we're not in it at the moment because our defense is really good, but sorry, our forward line and the way we're scoring is really good, but our defense is close to the bottom teams, which I sort of highlighted as far as some of the stats concerned last week. It was at the midfield where we lost a lot of control on that team defense, or were there other areas that concerned you? Was it front half pressure, inside 50? Was it the back six that caused a bit of a decline? Where do you sort of sit on all of that?
On my rewatch, the defensive elements wasn't actually something that I felt overly concerned about. I think so much of it is going to be personnel driven, and which can hopefully change this week. I think, like for me, I felt a very big shift in the first like 45 minutes of the game, the first quarter and a half to then on. I was really pleased with how we played in that first quarter and a half. I thought the goals that they kicked were very much Williams playing a role, which I think most of us would agree he probably shouldn't have been playing. And Nick Dacos brilliance. That was all their goals for like the first quarter and a half. I felt like the defense was stacking up really well. And then from there was a lot of things that broke down. And I actually felt like it was from a lot of different things, which I think is good, rather than it just being kind of like one big problem. Like I've seen some discussion about David King's comments about Wiedering and how we use him. And I actually agree with parts of it. I think there were times where Collingwood were really smart in dragging Wiedering away from where the ball was going to go, which I think there's elements that we could do. And like I started this with, I genuinely just think a lot of this is going to change when we get some two of our best three defenders back.
I agree. And I really wish someone was actually able to discuss it and dive into that a little more with David King, because I liked what he was bringing to the table. I think there's been a lot of heat on Wiedering this week from other elements too that I think are just flat out wrong. It was kind of best on ground for me for what Carlton were doing. But yeah, there were elements of him being caught out of position and not in the block in that hole where we kind of needed him to be. But part of me does really think that that's down to the other personnel out there. If McGovern's there, he probably 100%. Just covers and is there instead. There's no one else to roll over. We decided to, at the selection table, go shorter and not have a Brody Kemp type there, which I actually agreed with when they made the selections, because who's Kempy playing on? They play relatively small. Yep. He's probably going to get beaten by speed. I didn't mind the different look that we went for. Thought it was quite tactical, and really, apart from the Zach Williams matchup, everything else was quite good in defense. They held up really well.
So I'm not
concerned in that element. I definitely thought it was forward of the ball and the midfield getting outworked, and just a bit of how we move the ball, how we turn the ball over when we just didn't need to go into the hot zone at some times. It felt like the way we were moving the ball with a lot of the stagnant press of Collingwood sitting back and just dictating it from deep. We almost, when we wanted to go hot to the corridor, to those sort of parts of the ground, were the worst times for us to do it. Whereas when we needed to, we went wide and short. Is that decision-making? What does that come down to? There are a lot of those issues. And again, it was such a negative stack game for us because the most inside 50s we've conceded all year at 64. Second most was Brisbane 62. Before this game, we averaged 50.4. So that's like 14 more in this. And then we generated our lowest inside 50s for the year at 38. Before that, the lowest was Freo at 48, which was already a really low-scoring game.
Yeah. Exactly.
Average 56.6 before the Pies game. So it was incredibly low. They really stifled us. Absolute credit to Collingwood and how they adjusted after quarter time. But we absolutely need to get better. So with that, we've looked at the midfield. Let's look at the forwards. This has kind of been another key contention. There's a lot of pressure on a fair few of the players. Charlie Curnow's being told he's out of form and he's not playing very well. What's the forward mix like at the moment? Lack of pressure in this game. what small should be selected. So I kind of want to jump straight into this and say, Lockie, what is the right forward mix? How do we kind of overcome this issue we have with the smalls and everyone else complimenting Harry and Charlie?
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, for me, and like the way that the forward lines functioned has been a big issue for me the last few years. And to be honest, this game wasn't one that stood out to me as that being one of the biggest problems. I think that there's lots of elements that we can work on there. I think, like I touched on earlier, with the smalls, we're not getting enough from Fantasia. Has to be, everyone agrees with that right now. I'm really glad that we gave him a good go at it, but we need someone else that's going to be more impactful. So I think more of those guys like Elijah Hollands, Cunningham, Cottrell. Like Cottrell played a bit of a different role in this game. Hopefully we can get him maybe back to what he was doing. Like they're the kind of guys that I want to be around that forward line. I think, and a big issue, and it didn't really, it didn't rear its head as, like I said, as much for me in this game, because we actually scored reasonably well from the inside 50s that we got. It's just the movement inside 50. It's so obvious how different it was to Collingwood. Selfless leads, blocking. Where is that? We just do not do it. And almost every time that a player does, something good happens. It drives me crazy how we get the ball 70 from goal and everyone is just like, every single player is just standing there like, all right, get it in here.
Yeah, there's some element of this that I think was driven by how we move the ball from D50. As I said, Collingwood sat
back. This was my number one.
And they,
that was my number one issue.
Their ability to defend the ground was class. That's one of the best games I've seen Collingwood play all year. By far.
Yeah.
By far. The best I've seen Absolutely. Them set up. And if you look at the personnel we have out at the moment, and this isn't necessarily to blame injuries, because I don't want to be that person, but when you're missing a guy like McGovern, like Saad,
yes.
They're the ones that drive so much for you. They're the ones that are immediately looking to take the game on. And whether it's Saad as well as probably McGovern, they do want to run with the ball in hand. That gains you an extra 10, 20 meters. Going quick doesn't allow Collingwood to set up, and it just creates different angles for you to chop through them. It was so clear how much we miss guys like them, and we weren't really able to replicate that at all. We weren't getting enough out of Boyd. Looked like for a lot of stages, Zach Williams was playing more of a defensive role, which just doesn't suit him. And so much heat comes towards a guy like Zach Williams that I can understand it. And my issues with him are more down to a few stages when the ball was there to be won on the ground and it looked a little like he didn't want to pick the ball up. And is that a bit of confidence? I'm not sure what that was. But we're asking him to maybe play a role that he shouldn't be playing. We need him to be with Saad out, that guy that generates things. So to a degree, that can make the forwards look so much worse because they kind of have to clog up that space. There's nowhere else for them to be. But in trying to move that to one side, I do still agree with you and think that there are a lot of issues with how we are setting up in that forward line with multiple players all over the place. And I wonder if this is it personnel? Is it coaching around, you look at Collingwood, how much space they always seem to have inside 50. Their forwards were so close to the goal line and then they'd have that space in front of them around that 30, 40, 50 meter mark and all just sprint up towards it, get those little short leads. Whereas we just kind of stagnantly stand in the middle, clog up the space, clog up the leading lanes. Yes. And when you throw a guy like DeConing in there as well as that third tall, if he's not playing a dynamic ground, if he's not stretching things, then we're in all sorts and we're relying on Harry or Charlie to have to take a pack mark, which I just don't think is smart footy. So is it, if you were to nail it on one thing, is that personnel or is it more of a coaching of how we're setting up in that forward line?
That's tough. I definitely am not putting this discussion to personnel because I think, I don't know, like it seems so fundamental, and I hate when we talk about the shit that we learned when we were learning how to play footy, but I'm going to say Cunningham is a guy that I noticed doing it a lot. Standing 30, 35 metres out from goal when we're looking to bring the ball inside 50. And there's a man near him. Mate, do anything, anything. I get that you've been working and whatever and you're taking a little break, but if you move, there's going to be space behind you. There was one really clear time where a player did that, and TDK just leads straight up and take. And it's like, how did this happen? Oh, I don't know. The tiniest bit of movement. It drove me insane on the other end where I don't know who the Carlton player was, but it doesn't matter. That Collingwood were going to go inside 50 from a slow build-up. Mason Cox runs from the 50-metre line, sprints back to the goal square just to block Hoskin Elliott's man. Hoskin Elliott leads straight past Cox, and it was the simplest mark of the game. Where is that? Where is us looking out for each other like that? And I don't know whether that's coaching or if it's effort and just smarts.
It feels like we aren't smart in doing those little things. We don't seem to kick easy goals. And a big part of it, I believe, is on the players and just them being having that game awareness to know, hey, I shouldn't be here. I need to get movement. I need to start moving and be smart and try those little trick plays. But I think most of it right now has to come down to coaching, because it comes back to this. We're not getting the most out of what we have right now. And that that's the telling of great coaching. When you have maybe not the best players out there, but you're getting 100% out of them. I can't sit here and be honest with myself and say, we're getting the best out of everyone right now. And that forward line, we're doing what we can. You know, Collingwood, they've got some great players there, but they don't have like the key forwards as we do. So they've come up with a way that works for what they need to do and works for their strengths. We don't seem to work with our strengths. Our strengths should be creating the most amount of space for Harry or Charlie. Instead, we don't seem to do that. We seem to clog up the space. And we've had with this group multiple coaches, and weirdly, no one's been able to get the most out of our forward line. This has been something we've spoken about since we started this podcast. Forward line just does not seem to be functioning well enough. The only time it did was back half of last year. So in saying this, I kind of want to lead it to a different segment as we try to figure out how we can fix this in the short term. Do we need to... Actually, I'll ask this question first before we get into that. Sorry. Do you think we need to adjust how we play with the two or three talls? Do we need to say, Charlie, you're in the goal square. Harry, get the fuck out of there. Go up the ground. Take and all the smalls, get out of there. Like Geelong did a couple of years ago with Hawkins and Hawkins sort of paddock in there. It's his space. Let's isolate players. Or do you think it's the others around them that need to adjust rather than the talls themselves?
Yeah, I genuinely think it's both. I've seen takes from people on how they think Charlie and Harry should specifically each be used. My opinion is that it should be very divided between each of them. I want to see us be dynamic and have different things working. So I'm keen for us to have Charlie isolated in the square and Harry get up. I'm keen for Harry to get isolated in the square and Charlie get up. Give TDK a couple of those again. Let's try different things and try to exploit different things. I think, the clogging is just everything for me. Like it, and the crazy thing about so much of this is we're still in the top eight and we do get goals from bombing it in, from clogged up scenarios. We do get goals in that way. It's just about optimizing and us trying to win a premiership. Like it isn't atrocious right now. We lost to the Premier by a goal, but it's so obvious to see that with this little tinkering, we can be smashing. I genuinely feel like we could comfortably beat every team at our best.
No, I love that perspective. So pivoting to a couple of guys around there and talking about the right mix, because I was alluding to it a little bit, talking about the back half of last year, a man who may come back this week if he is fit, who was probably a key component in the functionality of that forward line, is Jack Martin. Looking at that third forward, at the moment, it was Kennedy at the start of the year, then it morphed into De Koning, who still looks lively, still is creating a lot of chances inside 50 and doing some good things. Who is that third forward for you right now? Is it De Koning? Is it Martin? Do you want to throw Cripps in there to change something up? How are you seeing that third role? And do you think that if we're able to maximize another target in there, would that create more space and allow less pressure, less clogging towards our key forwards if we're able to create multiple threats?
As we've, spoken about a lot this season and us being kind of more mature in how we address the home and away season, in the spirit of trying things and experimenting, like this is the time to do things. I want TDK and Martin in this forward line. I want somebody to tell me what... Like Martin, as we think of him as, a taller, better marking option, explain to me what Durden or Fantasia bring that he doesn't. I think that there is a scenario where we are optimally playing with one of Owies and Motlop, and then out those kind of four marking option kind of guys, and then our connectors, whether it's Cunningham, Hollands, Cottrell. That, for me, is what I want to see us trying. People might look at that, glance at that, and think it's too tall, but I need to see it. I need to see us try it.
No, I kind of agree. I think we need to be seeing everything at the moment. There's going to be games where maybe we don't have De Koning out there and we try to see what the forward line can look like. Jack Martin's in our best team, clearly, if fit. And what he brings. And I do agree that he can play more of that small role and be that second small rather than being a third option, because he can tackle, he can win it on the ground. Then he can also offer something above his head. And if we are able to maximize a De Koning in that forward line as well, then I just think that this is such a area for improvement and growth and opportunity, because I'm seeing the possibility of having De Koning push high up the ground with Harry and be those marking options and push the talls out of the space, because teams that play with those, that sort of third intercept defender, if De Koning's the guy and he's pushing up the ground and being a threat that way, then it's Charlie deep with maybe a small down there that he can absolutely monster. So I think it's clearly a work in progress, but I want to see our best personnel out there before I maybe make more judgments. But I would be interested to see what Cripps does look like down there in a little bit more of a role if we decide not to have De Koning be the second ruck, or if we decide Pitternet not to be the number one and De Koning's therefore going in the ruck, because I think that both of those can kind of change a bit of the dynamic. But I'm very keen to know what the listeners think. So if you're watching this on YouTube, drop your thoughts to everything we've covered so far, particularly around that forward line. What's our best mix? How do we fix these shortcomings and get the best out of what we have fit now and for the rest of the season? And if you're listening in podcast form, hit us up on the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Always keen to get your thoughts. I guess we've kind of nailed to a degree how we think we can get those improvements in our sort of mid-forward connection. We know the ball movement needs to get better. We know the clogging needs to disappear. But because we've answered that, this is almost a media meltdown, but it's not the big one this week. In Charlie Curnow, there's a narrative forming. I don't know out of where. I think the Prendergast nailed it best on Twitter when they said, it's almost like if you say it enough times, it starts to become fact. which is just bizarre in that Charlie's out of form. He's not playing well. Lockie, do you agree with this? Or is this maybe more of a reflection of how we're using him or the ball inside 50? Or do you just not see this as an issue at all?
I definitely think there's something here. I think it speaks more to just the discussion that we just had about the forward line and how it's generally functioning. Like, he's obviously still kicked a bunch of goals this year. It's really not an area that I feel passionately about, but like you said, to start this whole kind of segment, like, we're not optimizing many players at the moment. There isn't many guys that are doing their, you know, giving us exactly what we expect from them. So there's something there, but I think it's less about him and more about the team.
I don't get it completely, and I'd love someone to actually tell me what he's not doing, because I'm looking at the raw stats, which I know can sometimes be misleading, and that's why I like to delve deeper into it, like you did earlier when I'm bringing you, hey, look at these tackles inside 50, and you're immediately saying, we didn't even have the ball in there, so what do you, can we infer enough from that statistic? But when I'm looking at this, Charlie's leading the Coleman, 25 goals. He's second for contested marks at 22, only behind Harry. He's fifth for marks inside 50 at 24. Now he's 17th for marks on the lead. Maybe this is what people are saying. Is he sitting back too much and wanting it on his head? Is he not leading out to it enough? And I can understand that to a degree, but you say that. Look at some of the other players around him in this stat at the moment, because he's tied with Jeremy Cameron, who I would say plays a lot more of a lead up around the ground role. Absolutely. Than I'd probably expect him to have a few more of those. And trying to compare him with other players that are more him, the main one I want to compare him to is kind of Jesse Hogan throughout this. And he's only three behind Hogan and only five behind Harry, who is third. So that's while he's being that deepest player. So I find that's maybe not the biggest thing. He's 11th for score involvements with 58. Harry is the only key forward that has more than him, though. When you look at that overall 11th out of everyone in the competition, there's only one other key forward that's higher. So technically he's second, unless you're also counting Jake Waterman as a key forward, which I don't necessarily. I think he's a bit more sort of mid-sized, but then he'd be third as far as the key forwards are for score involvements. Is it his pressure, Lockie? Because he's 31 for tackles as far as things are concerned with the key forwards. Now that's maybe not amazing if we're judging him on his pressure. But again, let's compare him to a Jesse Hogan, because they're both that deep forward. He's the quote-unquote in-form player at the moment, playing at his peak. Yep. He has one less tackle than Hogan right now. He has two more than Jeremy Cameron. And then if you're just counting inside 50 tackles, which I think is more accurate because he's actually spends his time in there. He doesn't seem to roam higher up the ground. And he's tied 10th rather than 31st with guys like Hogan and Tex Walker. So there's other people that are higher on that tackles because they push higher up the ground for me. I don't think it's that much of an issue. I don't think he's out of form. I just don't think we're using him correctly in the sense of not giving him the amount of space he needs. Yes, there was a few efforts I didn't like seeing. A couple of one-on-ones I thought maybe he should have put more effort into the tackle or winning it himself. But I don't know. I'm more concerned about the space we're not creating for him and how hard 100%. The opportunities are that we are creating. What did you kind of make on that little stats breakdown on him? And do you see any area that he does need to improve on? Because he has set some really high standards for himself.
No, I think you did a really, really good job with that. And I think you're right. It's like, it's those parts that stand out and that people remember, like a fumble or two or a dropping of the head in a lost one-on-one, all those kind of things, which is just part of it. So I like that. And, tell me where you want him to lead and take a mark on a lead in this forward line. Like, I'm sorry. there's not like he cannot just run into where Corey Durden is standing. It's just not going to happen. I mean, maybe it speaks a little bit to your point earlier about Harry getting up the ground and Charlie being, you know, more of the deep guy. Do we balance that up a bit more? Which I like the idea of that. It's just so hard because the bar is so high. It's like we've been like that with Cripper over the years. We're like, gee, Cripper's down. He's only averaging 24 and whatever. So
it's his own high standards. It hurts him. So the last thing of the Navy noise is we've almost covered everything. So I'm not sure you'll have a lot left, but was there anything else that you kind of learnt from this that you think we can take away and build as we head towards our game against Melbourne next week from this Collingwood loss?
I'll be brief and just say, I mean, we did speak about it, but the biggest problem that I felt in this particular game was that the lack of supply, which came from the way that we were moving the ball from our defensive 50 to our offensive 50, it's so luck-based. I don't know. Like, it just feels like a really poor strategy that we have in place. And I know it's complex and there's different elements to it, but I just felt like there wasn't enough movement to create that space. Same as in the forward line. Too many players that we get the ball on defensive 50 and they're just standing there waiting, knowing that there's going to be a 50-meter kick to a contest, da-da-da. Players that could just put a little bit more effort in and create that option. Move a bit to create a bit more space for other guys. I felt like a lot of times it was a very safe option that we wouldn't take. So we'd have the ball at defensive 50 and, you know, rather than just doing the easy long thing, I thought there was times where we could be a bit safer. So that was part of it. And then the one other thing I'll just touch on, I was really worried about this after the first quarter and it didn't kind of happen so much because we didn't have so much supply in the end. I really hate when we just bomb at goal, like a snap without looking, a left foot snap, Akers left foot snap, Cripps left foot snap, Pitto just grabbing it out of the ruck contest. I feel like when we've got those stoppages inside 50, that's so valuable for us to get a good shot on goal. And I was frustrated early when we don't take, it's like it's taking our chances in a different way. I feel like sometimes we can be getting better shots on goal and it's pressure that is being put on us and those kind of things. But yeah, those are my last points.
I agree. That was my main point. I just think, yeah, to add on that, just so much little poor decision-making in that game in isolation that I think you nail with that inside 50. There's one like a George Hewitt that really stands out of him just getting it and going. I know there was like two from Pitto that you're just going, if there's anyone that I want not slapping it on his foot right now,
it's so low percentage. 50
under pressure is Big Brad, who I did thought played quite well for stages throughout that game as well. Still me taking too. Some marks around the ground. But yeah, the only other thing is just another stat I'll throw out there. I feel like Statman Dave throwing ridiculous amount of things out there, but just something to keep an eye on at the moment is that it was surprised me quite a lot is that we're number one for points from clearance.
Oh, yes.
But we're like 16th for points against from clearance in the sense that we're getting a lot go the other way when we lose them. So this is a bit of a concern in how we're defending things, but at least hopefully we're aware of this now. It's early, round eight, which is why I'm definitely not panicking, even though it sounds potentially like I am. But an area to grow on. So let's move to Media Meltdown. Haven't done this in a few weeks. Hasn't felt we've had that big volcano, whether it's Kane Corns himself spilling something out there and everyone loses their minds over what the media said. But this time, it's a bit more of the social media and the blowback from this game. Emotions, everything rises against Collingwood. It's a tough one. It's a tough one to be stable, I guess, mentally through this clash, especially another close loss. Do you think that there's been a bit of an overreaction to this loss? Because I know it's somewhat isolation when you do hear these things, but this is what this segment's about, trying to be a bit more rational with a take. So I want to know your thoughts, Lockie, because I heard things like, we're just as bad as we were at the start of last year. We haven't improved. this is where we're just going to fall back like we did last season. We started okay and we've dropped off again. And then I heard one of the craziest things that I've ever heard, in that not only were we bad at the start of last year, but because of how we're playing at the moment, it is confirmation that the back half of last season is not a true reflection of who we are. We were simply riding a wave of momentum and it was pure luck that we got there and did what we did. It is not repeatable. Lockie, what do you make of where we kind of sit right now and how much you're taking from this loss into our form right now?
Wow. I do not know where to take this. As you know, I don't get on social media very much after a loss because I just don't see it as a valuable thing to be taking in a lot of those takes. Wow. Which one of those do I even address? I think I'll start by saying maybe they're right. There's a possibility that this is shit and we are not going to make the eight. There is I'm no smarter than anybody else to say that, even though I'm optimistic and I still think that we can win the flag this fucking year, maybe not. Maybe the writing is on the wall and all of those things. I can't be certain that that's not the case. But I think if you look at all of these games individually and try and take a step back and be rational, you'll see that maybe we lost to the two best teams apart from us these last 2 weeks by a couple of kicks. And what we've discussed today is a lot of little things to fix to hopefully be better than those teams.
Yeah, and it's funny, my perspective, I know there's going to be a lot of people that don't like it, because anytime I feel like go more this positive route, I see the comments on the YouTube. I know there's a few individuals that will not like the way of this take, but I hope you can understand where it's trying to come from. But either way, I kind of don't care, because my job on this podcast is to give my honest opinion of things. I'm not going to bullshit it. I'm just going to say how I feel, going to stick to what my opinions are. And I think at the start of this year, we said, and I saw a lot in the community kind of sharing this point of view, that it's not just about 2024. You know, this is kind of the start of our window. It's about the next 3 to 5 years in making sure we're there, thereabouts, building, and hopefully we can get one, if not multiple, premierships throughout that time. And to preface a few things there, I am definitely not saying this season is over or that it doesn't matter. This season doesn't matter. It's all about the next few years and developing. That's not what I'm saying. But my God, people, it's round eight. Like, let's just settle down. And look, the expectation, yes, it's still top four, it's still to win the flag, but I just don't see that there is a reason to panic right now, that there is this, because I don't see that there's this rush to be perfect, not only at round eight, but in 2024. That's kind of where I'm seeing things right now. And maybe that's a perspective that not a lot share. And I know we can kind of get bogged down in the week to week. And one of the things I want to send straight to hell is this, like, power ranking that we have in the AFL, where every single week it's, here's my dickhead tier list that I've got saying, who are the bloody top number one contenders right now for the premiership? And I'm seeing idiots on Twitter that, I don't know who you are. Like, okay, firstly, who the fuck am I? Firstly, so who the fuck is this person who's got this spreadsheet out there every week saying my formula actually says that this team is not in the premiership window and that they're not expected to win many games this year? It's like, off what? You haven't given any evidence on this. You flip-flop every single week as soon as, you know, Melbourne win. Melbourne aren't a premiership contender. They beat Geelong and all of a sudden, well, Melbourne are the premiership contender this week. And I just need that to go in the bin, because that is really frustrating me. And I guess to sort of continue on my big rant here is that, like, yeah, we got to make sure that we're not wasting any chances, because, you know, anything could happen. We could fall off a cliff and not be in a premiership window, and we're rebuilding next year. You know, anything can happen. But I think that I'm seeing a difference in quality so far right now, and a jump in standard for us. You know, our losses this year poor performance against Adelaide, but we lose by 2 points by conceding a goal in the last couple of minutes. We had chances to win that. Always. We probably should have won regardless, even though we played poor. We lost to Geelong by 13 points. They're a contender. We dominated every single bloody metric possible. They were clinical. We defended poorly, but we were still in that game. You could argue that we had every right to take that away from Geelong. And what's even more frustrating is they didn't miss a goal. And then you watch them this week and they couldn't hit the bloody barn door. They were missing every single opportunity. They're a little less clinical. We win that game. And now this week against Collingwood, another top eight team. We were poor again, particularly after quarter time. We had scores level with a minute to go. Then we conceded a late goal and lost. We were poor, but still had opportunities to win this game. You know, we're going to lose games. We're going to lose against poor opposition. We should win. There's going to be upsets, but I don't know. Geelong, Collingwood are top eight sides. It happens. The fact that we're still playing poorly, there's so many areas with key personnel out, areas we need to improve. We're giving ourselves opportunities to be in these games, opportunities to win. That's why I'm still so positive on this, and it's why I won't really overreact to this loss. I think it hurts more because it's Collingwood, and we build it up as maybe this game was that Collingwood feel a little near the decline. So is this the passing of the torch where we win this, and now the next 10 years we're going to be causing the misery and we're going to be starting to get our own streak, and maybe because that wasn't to be, it hurts more. Yes, we need to fix these areas and quickly to sort this out and get the wins, but it's round eight. I just think we need to get a little bit more perspective, because I don't think bad teams create chances to win in their losses. And so far we've done that. We're not a bad team. We're clearly top eight. Just remains to be seen how high we can go. And maybe I'm wrong, like you said. Maybe we're shit, but I don't know. I'm just not going to live in that mental space. That's just never where I am. You can get in the comments and disagree all you like. And hey, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to congratulate you, but I want to live in the world where Carlton are good. And so that's where I am going to be. It's going to be a long year. We're going to lose more games. This is nowhere near as horrific as I've seen Carlton play. Let's go out there and sort it out. But it may take a little bit of time.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the part that stands out for me, and you kind of touched on at the end about admitting when you're wrong, I definitely want to see more accountability from the media in general. And when you're saying things like there is two, like Carlton can't win the premiership, or, you know, there's two contenders left, there just isn't. There isn't two contenders. Like, anybody that really thinks about this rationally can see that there's, like, it's just not that way at the moment. So, no, I agree with everything you're saying. Let's get up and about.
Absolutely. It's just about learnings and implementing those learnings, which sounds so stupid, but we just got to peak at the right time. And no, I think we spoke about at the start of the season again, like, we're going to get in a blip at some stage. We're going to lose 2, 3, maybe 4 in a row. It's how we react to that. I'm happy to be doing that now while we've still got key personnel out and starting to get fit again.
Yeah.
Let's learn, and let's learn against the best opposition. But that's the media meltdown. Give me your thoughts on my big rant. What do you think? Are we completely going towards a bit of a more than a blip? Is our form completely sagging, or is it just a short-term thing? Give me all your thoughts in the comments below, and hit us up at socials at Navy Blue Corner. But Lockie, we've come to the concluding moment of this episode. It's gone a little bit long, but there's been a lot to discuss. It is the votes, of course, for the Navy Blue Corner Blue Bagger Badge of Honor. I need your 3-2-1, and I want everyone who's watching and listening along to drop their 3-2-1. 3 for best on ground, 2 for the person who went above and beyond what is expected of them, and your 1 to whoever you want, and give me all your reasons. Lockie, your votes.
I'm actually not going to give you all my reasons. I'm not going to elaborate on these unless there's specifics that you're concerned about. So I'm just going to go with 3 for Harry, 2 for Nicky Newman, and 1 for Weeders.
I am almost aligned. I'm glad we've slightly differed. I've gone Weedering 3, Newman 2, 1 for Mackay. I think the only reason Mackay gets the one and potentially not the three with this voting system is literally just that last kick kind of really irritates me in just, it could have done, I've watched it back and I was freeze framing like every frame to see what was going on. And I was like, you probably should have gone to Charles deep. You also, I think, had Akers short to your right. I'm almost more disappointed in a couple of our forwards that were streaming forward, because if they just dog-leaded straight back up, he has another option on the 50. Is that an issue with our ball movement again that we've talked about this episode? Who knows, but we'll learn from it. We'll get better. We'll come out and absolutely belt Melbourne. I have no doubt about it, but that is going to wrap up this episode and this match review on the Collingwood loss. Make sure to drop all the comments and your thoughts to everything we've discussed. If you have any questions, drop them there as well. We'll be sure to be rummaging through and answering any questions that you guys have. If you're listening in audio form, hit us up on the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Every single week, our episodes, if you want them in video form, our match review is going to be on our own YouTube channel, Navy Blue Corner. Our match build-up, our preview will be every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. So if you want to watch us, there's the places to find us. Links will be in the description. Links will be in the show notes. Keen to build up the Melbourne game in our next episode and be back here next week with another win. Up the Baggers. See you guys next time.